And this CFL condition turns out to be extremely useful to understand the stability of the finite difference schemes. So now let us use this whatever we have learned to see some examples when a finite difference scheme is stable and when it is unstable. But before we do that, there is also a separate analysis, very beautiful work going back to von Neumann, and which essentially captures the same thing, writing the difference equation in terms of the Fourier transform. In terms of this Fourier transform leads to this amplification factor G, and this essentially captures like how does a solution changes at each time step through this amplification factor G, which for this particular difference equation turns out to be this factor with some theta, which is this H zeta, where zeta is a dual coordinate. So the main idea is that advancing the solution by one time step equals multiplying Fourier transform by the amplification factor. You do not want this amplification factor to be greater than 1, the modulus of that, because if it becomes greater than 1, that means that your solution is going to anyway blow up after some time steps. So the main idea from the von Neumann analysis is go to the Fourier space of this difference equation, find the amplification factor. That amplification factor has to be bounded by some quantity. If your amplification factor depends on all the discreteness parameters, then it is 1 plus some constant times the discreteness parameter. If it is independent of the discreteness parameters, then it must be bounded by 1. So this is what we will remember. Two things: CFL condition, which essentially is the same other side of the story, which tells us that the speed of propagation must be greater than speed of propagation of PDE. And from the von Neumann analysis, using inverse Fourier transform, that the amplification factor should be bounded by 1. So some examples. I will show you two examples, one which is stable, one which is unstable. Let us start with an unstable scheme, which is a forward time central space. Again, this was not shown earlier, but this is the difference equation one works with. If you start with the same hyperbolic PDE I am showing you here, for this same hyperbolic PDE, this is what is the finite difference equation. And if you do the von Neumann analysis, you go to the Fourier space, you find that this is what is the resulting equation for this amplification factor G. And this leads to that this modulus of G square, the modulus of G square is given by this quantity. And it turns out that this modulus of G is always greater than 1 unless you choose theta equal to 0 or pi, which is a very severe restriction on your solutions. And therefore, the forward time central space scheme is unstable. And therefore, it is not used when you try to use finite difference schemes. Now, you may not realize when we are learning about finite difference schemes and we pick up the simplest one and it works, we can say, well, we can show to our supervisor, for example, that my code is working. The problem is that for some given alpha and some lambda, the scheme will always work for some time. But the point is that at certain point, there will be instabilities which will come up. So many times it happens that when we are doing some coding, like some things blow up after some time. That is one characteristic of this. Like maybe your scheme is stable only for some time for your choice of parameters which you have taken, but after some time things are going to blow up. So this provides an unambiguous answer without doing actual computation. Theoretically, when is your scheme going to be stable or not? So if you get G greater than 1, you cannot use it. That scheme is unviable. Now let us take forward time backward space scheme. This is again the variant of the same partial differential equation. The von Neumann analysis gives you now this equation. The equation changes because the difference equation has changed. And the stability requirement then translates to this inequality, which leads to essentially the CFL condition that alpha lambda is less than or equal to 1. So the forward time backward space scheme will give you stable evolution if you choose your alpha and lambda, if you choose your discreteness parameters such that alpha lambda is less than or equal to 1. Alpha lambda are essentially your discreteness parameters. They are related to them. So it means that if you choose your discreteness carefully, this is a good scheme, forward time backward space scheme. For quantum gravity, it means that if you encounter a difference equation like this, and if your underlying quantum theory has set alpha and lambda such that CFL condition is satisfied, then your discretization is viable. Otherwise, your discretization is not going to be viable. And here I will actually point out one very important point which Renate mentioned in the 10-minute break. In this talk and in this analysis, we are assuming that at the infrared scales, we have GR. We have a partial differential equation, or we have a theory which is Einstein's theory. Now, you can be far less conservative than what I am, and you can say, well, I believe in a modified theory of gravity even at the low scales. For example, in the Mond hypothesis, I believe. Then you will be working with a different partial differential equation, and then your stability analysis will have to somehow take into account that you are not trying to approximate a PDE, but a PDE with certain modifications. So you can always change the rules of the game, but the underlying analysis remains the same. Given a PDE, what you believe in at the low, at when the gravity becomes very weak, you can always do the stability analysis of your underlying quantum gravity scheme. You can be even far more unorthodox and say, well, quantum gravity has to give me a distinct signature at extremely large volumes, at very, very small space-time curvatures, and then I don't care about this stability issue. Maybe this is what I'm looking for, a unique distinct signature at the supernova scales, which no quantum gravity gives so far. You have to be careful again that it should be consistent with all other experiments till you reach those scales. It should be physically viable. Later, I'll give an example of a physically unviable scheme in loop quantum cosmology, where some people thought, in fact, one paper was even put on archive saying, well, this is a beautiful signature which we can use to constrain dark energy. But the authors were only looking at one aspect of the thing. They were not worried about what happens to Big Bang nucleosynthesis, whether there is even a history of the universe which takes you to the dark energy. The answer turns out to be no. What happens in that scheme is the universe would have even recollapsed far, far ago. Like if you take that scheme seriously, that even at the density of water, there will be bounces. So that is certainly ruled out. We don't see such quantum gravity effects in this time. So one has to be careful. One has to be careful in implementing this and also being careful in extracting information.
Yeah. So just to follow up on that, in fact, suppose you had a IR theory and you've got modifications to the IR theory with the higher curvature terms. Is there a way of assessing, so that's some small correction to the IR. Is there a way of assessing the convergence here depending on the error or the size of that? So now you don't have a fixed PDE, but it's correct up to some error.
Yes.
So is there an error analysis that will help you?
Yes. So that error analysis
on that correction based on your requirements of convergence.
That error analysis is already incorporated in von Neumann stability. If this is less than one, that means your solution is not going to blow up. And your small window to extract that signature at the modified gravity level in IR will be viable. If this is greater than one, then you will be in serious trouble even at the IR scales. If the signature is very small at the IR scales, it will not work if G is greater than one. So, yes.
How do you adapt this if your theory is all of a sudden nonlinear, though? Because my understanding is you can't do von Neumann stability analysis on a nonlinear theory.
Well, if we have finite difference equations which correspond to hyperbolic, then we can do that. But I'm not really sure. Sorry? I thought the question was slightly different. How do you do von Neumann stability when you don't have this setup? You can do something similar. Like, for example, in the case of the Schwarzschild interior, it's a current project which I'm working on. We do not have a hyperbolic setup, but you can do some sort of stability analysis motivated from here, essentially to check whether your amplification factor is greater than one or not, to see the blow up or not. So you're right that in general one cannot apply this method, but the crux of the idea is the same, that you, when whatever discretization is there, you don't want the solution to blow up as you progress. Okay, so let me come to now stability of LQC difference equations. So this is what were the examples, and now these are the LQC difference equations at large volume we are going to study. So again, here the goal is slightly different. We are not worried about what happens at the ultraviolet scale, when we have full quantum space-time. We are more worried about what happens in the infrared scale, whether you have a quantum gravity theory which resolves a singularity as well as is consistent with GR at large scales. And in the very early works of loop quantum cosmology, this was really something which was not understood. People were finding, some of my friends found solutions which led to singularity resolution, but since they were not worried about the at very small space-time curvatures, but they were never able to discover that whether their quantization is viable or not. So that is why infrared issue is very important. So let me take this approach first for the positive result, which was proved in these works, which is called as improved dynamic scheme. I'm going to focus on master scalar in spatially flat isotropic FRW space-time again. And that difference equation which I showed you earlier can be written in this form with a change of variables of nu, which are related to that V in not very complicated way, which gives you C plus C minus C zero are your difference operators coming from loop quantum gravity. You do the volume analysis at large volumes, that equation turns out to be this equation. Then you do the large volume approximations of C plus C minus C zero. You find two roots, and the amplitude of both the roots is unity. So one is very happy that G is one in both the cases. And one can actually show that for this improved dynamic scheme, the quantum Hamiltonian difference equation is stable at large volumes for massless scalar in spatially flat isotropic spacetime. It doesn't imply that if you change the matter content, things will not change. Things do change if you change the matter content, but not for this spacetime. So let us see. Now, massless scalar with a positive lambda in spatially flat isotropic FRW. And why positive lambda? Because if you put a positive lambda with any other matter content, positive lambda always wins at large volumes. So this is the matter content you will be interested in. The energy density of the massless scalar goes as 1 over A6. It dies out. Positive lambda is going to remain constant in energy density, and it is going to dictate the dynamics at infrared scales. So this work was mastered by Kaminsky and Pavlovsky, and then Pavlovsky and Ashtekar in 2010. The difference equation is very similar to the previous difference equation I showed you. But in the large volume limit, G turns out to be more complicated with this particular form, where a lambda critical, which is related to this rho max I showed you, the same deltas appearing there. It turns out that if you have lambda, if you choose your lambda which is between these values, between 0 and lambda critical, then you get two roots from von Neumann analysis, both having magnitude unity. So everything is fine. But if you take lambda, which is greater than lambda critical, then one of the roots takes magnitude which is greater than unity, and your difference equation is not good. Your analysis essentially breaks down. So this was shown by Tanaka et al., and they showed that for lambda greater than lambda critical, difference equation is not stable at large volumes. Now, very surprisingly, and these my friends, they didn't knew this when they did this work, they are essentially functional analysis, and they showed that if you look at the full physical Hilbert space, they were coming completely from the theoretical side. And they showed that in the physical Hilbert space, you only get any non-trivial states if you have lambda less than lambda critical. If you go to lambda greater than lambda critical, there is nothing there in the quantum theory. So it's a beautiful consistency which appears in von Neumann analysis and the function analysis side. Same thing which happened when I was working with Gorici on looking at UV and IR limits, and Mary and Daniel Cartin and Gaurav Khanna were looking at stability analysis. So the pictures converged coming from completely different sides. So the lesson here is that this improved dynamic scheme is stable, both if you take massless scalar, which has equation of state equal to 1, and if you take massless scalar plus positive lambda, which has an effective equation of state equal to minus 1. So the whole range of the weak energy condition from W equal to 1 of equation of state to W equal to minus 1, everything is going to be stable. So one can actually take this conjecture and one can show that. So this looks like a very nice consistent scheme from loop quantum cosmology, where you're going to get nice results everywhere. This is what von Neumann analysis says. Now let us go to earlier loop quantum cosmology quantizations. And this was essentially Ashtekar, Boyevold, Lewandowski in 2003. And then we also had a paper doing some things in physical Hilbert space and numerics. The finite difference equation is not a uniform discreteness equation now in volume, but in this variable mu, which is like areas. It's not a volume, but it's the area of the some patches of the universe. So it's a different discretization scheme. And mu naught is some constant area. It's not this scheme is uniform discrete in area, not in volume. So we are f plus f minus f0, and these b's are some, again, some things which appear from differences. And volume analysis yields this particular equation where omega is related to p phi of this phi. And it turns out that if you do this analysis, that both the roots of this volume analysis are again having the magnitude which is 1. So everything looks fine. The difference equation is stable. And that is precisely the reason, like from 2000 till 2006, it was never discovered why do we need any improved dynamics, because we were only looking at massless scalar fields and everything looked fine. The finite difference equation was stable. We never found any problems with numerics when we were doing. And since we weren't asking questions with different matter, we never understood any other issues. So let us understand what happens if you include cosmological constant, and then things change completely. If you take positive lambda in the same scheme, then you get this particular term. The volume analysis yields you this equation at large volumes. And in the large volume limit, you get one of the roots, which has a magnitude greater than 1. For any given value of lambda, there will be always some mu. There is always some area or patch in the universe where this equation is going to become unstable. And we didn't discover this, like this volume stability analysis I did in my review like some years ago. But the way I understood this problem was I was looking at the effective space-time description of this scheme. And we were able to show that if you put a positive lambda or any matter which violates strong energy condition, you will start getting bounces, or you will start getting recollapse of the universe at late times. There is no recollapse of a k equal to 0, spatially flat homogeneous isotropic universe at large volumes. We live in a dark energy dominated universe right now. There is no recollapse. There is not going to be any recollapse in the future. That's what cosmological dynamics tells us. If you look at the effective space-time description of this, the recollapse was occurring already. If you look at when does the bounce occurs, the bounce could happen anywhere, starting from density of water to super Planckian scales. There was no particular curvature scale at which bounce was occurring. The physics was anyway known to be wrong here. And the volume and stability analysis just confirms this, that, well, the magnitude is greater than 1. This finite difference equation should have never been used. And like about 20 papers were written on it, some of them in PRLs, which essentially are wrong because they are based on the wrong finite difference equation. Okay, now with this analysis of the stability of equations, let us come to the robustness of bounds. Now we are going to use the same thing to push the boundaries further of what we know. And before we understand the robustness of bounds, we should understand what are the numerical challenges. What do we actually want to solve in computationally? So the quantum difference equation, which I showed you, which is of the improved dynamics, can be extremely well approximated by a second order Wheeler-DeWitt equation, which is of this particular form, which I also showed you earlier. And then you can study the volume and stability of this equation. You can study the characteristics of this equation, the speed of this equation, and so on. The characteristic speeds of this equation, these equations turn out to be these two eigenvalues, lambda plus minus. And now you can ask what happens to the CFL stability, what happens to the Couran number. And it turns out that if you want a stable evolution with this scheme at large volumes, then the stable evolution requires that the maximum time step, you have to do the discreteness in volume is already fixed by loop quantum gravity. The discreteness in matter is not fixed by anything. That is in your hand, whatever you want to play with. But that maximum time step has to go as 1 over volume. That is what this differential equation tells you. Now, this is really bad numerically because the volume discreteness is fixed. And that means that the maximum possible time step, which is inversely proportional to the volume, if you are interested in the universes which are extremely large, then you have to use the time step in time, in the time coordinate phi, extremely small. That means your computational domain is extremely dense, and that means you need huge computational power to do anything. You can't use a sparse domain in time. So if you want to understand bounds for highly quantum states, states which are not sharply peaked, states which are wide, extremely wide states, very, very quantum universes which are going towards a Big Bang singularity, or very wiggly states, very squeezed states, highly non-Gaussian states, And these states which probe deep Planck geometry, like if you are interested in the bounces which occur very close to Planck volume, then it turns out that states are extremely dispersed in that case, which means that you need a very large grid in volume. If you need a very large grid in volume, your V is extremely large. Your discreteness in V is already fixed, which means you need extremely fine step, discrete fine step in time, and then your computational cost is extremely high. This was the reason why in 2006, when we did the first numerical simulation, we just took sharply peaked states at large values of momentum, large p phi, which bounce far away from the Big Bang. We were happy with that result. But if you want to show the robustness with all kinds of states for different spacetimes, you have to go in this territory, and then those simulations cannot be done, which we did 10 years ago. So let us look at some numbers. What do we need? So for the isotropic models, for sharply peaked initial states, the simulations, like the computational domain, where you start the state with it in numerically, is 10 to the power 5, like it's 10 to the power 5 Planck volumes. That's what we did. Very small universes, but still large enough. And the computational time is 15 minutes on a single core, like whatever Fortran code we had, which was not parallelized. We were running on that time Pentium 4 desktops, and they took a day. We were not good coders, but today I can do the same thing on 15 minutes in the computers which we have on a single core. Now, for the same widely spread states, if you want to probe for, instead of 1,000 Planck volume, if you want to go to 10, I haven't been able to go to 5 yet. If you want to go to 8, 10, that is the range you are looking at. Things just increase enormously. To even catch the state properly with its dispersion at 5 sigma, you need a V outer of 10 to the power 12 or higher, like 10 to the power 18 or something. You need a huge grid in V. Larger the grid in V, the finer is the grid in time. That is what CFL stability is giving you. And this requires 10 to the power 7 more spatial grid points. And since the quantum grid is fixed in space, stability requirements lead to 10 to the power 7 finer time steps. You do the same computation. No one has done that, but the estimate which we came up with is that you need 10 to the power 10 years to do one simulation like that on a single core. So obviously, like, it's a no-go. You cannot do this. There are two ways to attack this problem. Go to HPCs or be smart. Like, try to come up with an algorithm which does things smartly. So I will tell you, like, how we did things in a slightly smarter way. Okay, but now what about anisotropic models? Anisotropic models have many other issues. First of all, there is a non-hyperbolicity which you encounter for Bianchi 1 vacuum Wheeler de Witt spacetime. Now, Bianchi 1 vacuum is the simplest, but one of the most beautiful Bianchi spacetimes, and it captures many features of the generic approach to singularities. You can't even do this since you don't have a hyperbolic evolution. You may think, well, it's a no-go. We can't even do any numerics, whatever I told you so far. But then my friends like Tomasz Pawlowski, who are extremely smart in doing functional analysis, they are able to find all these eigenfunctions of this whole quantum Hamiltonian constraint operator, which looks very complicated. Once you get the eigenfunctions, you can essentially do some sort of a transform like this. Choose V2 and V3, which are like the Bianchi spacetimes have three scale factors. Now I'm calling them V2 and V3 in some way. And the conjugate of one of the scale factors as a time. So instead of the relational matter, you use one of the parts of the geometry itself as a clock. And then you can do that. You don't have to do any evolution. You can actually just compute this integral everywhere on the grid, on your computational grid. But that is also very extremely computationally extensive job for us sharply peaked states, which we have already done, and some of the widely spread states. It is very expensive, still 10 to the power 14 floating point operations. For wider states, the memory which you need to do one such computation is 5 TB. You cannot have any such, at least I do not have access to such single core machines in my office. So you have to go to HPC. There is no other way. This you can bypass with some smart algorithm. This you encounter the problem head on, that you have to do high performance computing even to do one integration. Not one integration, but one computation. And then this is where the Cactus framework becomes very useful for us. Okay, so now let me introduce you a chimera scheme, which it is called chimera because it's a mythical animal, which is a hybrid of two animals in a way. And my friend Peter came up with this name, but I didn't like it, but okay, it has stuck. So it's a bad animal, mythical thing. So the why we call it chimera is because we use one property of our loop quantum cosmology. That at large volumes, loop quantum cosmology finite difference equation approximates the relativity equation. The moment you are away from the bounds, like 1,000 Planck volumes away from the bounds, you can actually switch off loop quantum gravity and everything is given by GR. So why don't we use that? So we say, okay, let us use two grids. We will use one inner grid where there is an actual discrete space-time given by loop quantum gravity. And then when we have found the convergence to the Einstein manifold beyond certain volumes, we will just forget we have loop quantum gravity and we'll match it with the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. Now, in the outer grid, which is the Wheeler-DeWitt equation, the fundamental equation is a continuous differential equation. There is no restriction what should be your discreteness scale in space. You can do anything you want. It's just doing classical numerical relativity on those grids. So you can use, for example, these forward difference, finite differencing methods, or you can use discontinuous Galerkin methods. They were sparse. They are sparse methods. They speed up the calculation enormously. And if you also then choose a new coordinate, which is x equals log v, in that grid, not in the inner grid. Inner grid is large enough. It's like 10 to the power 6 Planck volume. So the bounce is occurring only at about 1,000 Planck volume. So it is still huge. But if you want to do 10 to the power 12 Planck volume or 10 to the power 18 Planck volumes, you don't have to use finite differencing given by loop quantum gravity all the way to 10 to the power 18. You can switch it off after some time once you have checked convergence. And there you can use a new coordinate, as is always done in Misner variables, for example, in Wheeler-DeWitt theory. Go to logarithmic variables. And there the characteristic speeds are constant. They are not functions of volume. So that means you can choose your grids in time and volume the way you want. The grid in time is no longer constrained by grid in space. So that solves many things. So first, discontinuous Galerkin methods speed up because they are sparse. Second, you make this change of coordinates, they already cause you a speed up. So suppose you take a scheme which is about 12,500 Planck volumes inner, and the outer boundary, the inner boundary is 12,500 Planck volumes where the bounces are occurring only at 1,000. Everything is fine beyond 2,000. And V outer is 10 to the power 10 to the power 12. That same computation estimate I gave you for 10 to the power 10 years, that estimate turns out to be 5 minutes on that same single core. So it's a huge speed up. So the idea is that before you go to HPCs, HPC can solve every problem for you. It's like an elephant. It will crush anything. But you should not waste computational resources like that. Like you should, as numerical people, like we should come up first with theoretical arguments. Let us simplify it. Let us see like where the physics lies, what we want to catch, and then you don't actually need HPC for all this. You can do it on your laptop. All of these simulations with very wide states. So all these were done actually on my office desktop. So no HPC used there. Slightly disappointing for me because I wrote the grant for HPC, but then I discovered this algorithm. So I still had to justify the current work and so on. So, but it is not that HPC is not used. It is used. I will come to it. So now let us test. Once we have this beautiful algorithm, we can test the validity of the effective dynamics. So take a state which is P phi equals 200, sharply peaked state, and evolve that state backwards towards a big bang. These red dots are the expectation values of the volume versus phi, and there is a beautiful bounce. And then I'm not telling you the effective dynamics, but the effective dynamics is very, very simple. We all know the Friedman equation classically is just given by this. Hubble square is 8 pi g by 3 rho. The effective Friedman equation, which you can derive in loop quantum cosmology, is given by this equation, where rho max is the same rho max, 0.41 rho Planck. The bounce happens because h becomes 0 when rho becomes equal to rho max. When rho becomes equal to rho max, h becomes 0. When rho is much smaller than rho max, this equation goes to this equation. That is why you get a Friedman equation from there. So that is the effective equation. So I'm plotting that effective dynamics in these blue dashed blue, purple, etc. curves. Red is the real quantum curve. And we can see something. We can see that, well, if you take, even in this P phi equal to 200, if you increase the fluctuation in the state, which is given by this spread, sigma, then the effective dynamics effective dynamics is not matching very well with the quantum dynamics. There are error bars. Everything is in these relative fluctuation bars. But the quantum dynamics is some of my friends thought that if you increase the fluctuation in the state, the bounds will disappear. The opposite happens. If you increase the fluctuation in the state, the quantum dynamics and effective dynamics do not agree, as we clearly see here. But the effective dynamics is overestimating the space-time curvature at which the bounds occurs. The bounds occurs even earlier. It's as if the quantum fluctuations of the state are helping the repulsiveness of quantum gravity to bounce the universe earlier than what sharply peaked states do. But we see for the first time, for very small states, which effective dynamics tells are going to bounce very close to the 10 Planck volume and so on, there is a disagreement between the quantum theory and the effective space-time description. It's all still within the error bars, which I have not plotted here, of this red curve. But the important lesson is that the quantum gravity, if you increase the fluctuation of the state, quantum gravity doesn't destroy, the quantum fluctuations don't destroy the bounce occurs much earlier than the effective dynamics. And this tells us the validity of the scheme, which it means that for these particular kind of numbers, you can trust effective dynamics. For these numbers, you can still trust effective dynamics, but expect that actual quantum effects will be stronger. Okay. So now just some more results. Something very strange resulted. Like when we were doing this effective dynamics, we were expecting, like when I was working with Tomasz Pawlowski 10 years ago, that so this is what I'm plotting is a departure between the quantum theory and the effective theory with this delta. Departure between the quantum expectation values of the volume at the bounds and the effective dynamics, which tells you where is the bounds. This is this delta. We expect that if you increase the fluctuation in volume, like this, this departure increases. That's what we expect intuitively. But what we found is this very curious, like this hockey stick curve, which tells you a non-monotonic behavior. If you decrease the fluctuation in volume, the more and more sharply peaked state you make, your departure takes a minimum value and then again starts increasing. So very curious result came out. And this is, I'm just showing you one plot. You can do it for different observables, different combinations, different relative fluctuations, and non-monotonicity is always there. We could not have discovered it because this also requires very strange kind of grids. And this non-monotonicity is only a feature when you find when you have achieved this computational complexity. And it also shows one very important result that many times we see in various papers in loop quantum cosmology that people sometimes claim that I have this affected picture and it gives me this result. One has to be very, very careful, because what we found is that if you change the way you have constructed the initial state even slightly, these curves can change. So one has to be very careful with all sorts of predictions which some people claim. So qualitatively they are fine, but we should take them with some pinch of salt. Now let me show you one example of a highly quantum state, just as an advertisement. We just came up with some, let us choose some very wiggly state and let us see whether it bounces. And let us see whether the relative fluctuations, whether they remain bounded when you go through the bounds. And you can see, like, you start with some profile here, it bounces, and then you actually get a very similar profile on the other side. So this essentially proved some of the theorems which were proved here by a lot of people here. These are analytical results which were saying that relative fluctuations will remain bounded, and this was the first numerical evidence which showed that yes, the whatever wave function you start with very arbitrary fluctuations, not only it bounces, but what you get on the other side is very, very similar than what you start with. For such universes, the energy density at the bounds can be very small. So there is a maximum of the energy density, which is 0.41, which comes from an exactly solvable model. But if you take very large fluctuations, then you find that the energy density of the bounds can be very, very small. And this is consistent with what I showed you here. If you take large fluctuations, the quantum universe is bouncing much earlier. There is a large gap from this effective dynamics. Effective dynamics always sorry, this red curve is, the blue curve is the effective dynamics, which always occurs at 0.41. All these universes which are quantum, they're occurring at smaller and smaller energy densities. So energy density can be much, much smaller than this 0.41, but you have to make your state extremely quantum. So very, very quantum universes will bounce much earlier in space-time curvature scale than very, very heavy, sharply peaked universes like ours. Now, we have been also able to generalize this to potentials. This is coming soon, hopefully. And we take a potential, which is inspired by cyclic models, which Neil Turok introduced many years ago with Paul Steinhardt. And what we find is that there is no singularity. This is a very complicated theoretical exercise, because the moment you have a time-dependent Hamiltonian, then everything breaks down analytically, and you have to do things in certain approximations and so on. And what you find is that even in such steep potentials, which are highly steep potentials, there is a singularity resolution. It is not just tied to massless scalar, and the state remains sharply peaked throughout. And again, in these effective dynamics, which is this blue curve for sharply peaked states, agrees with quantum dynamics throughout. There are some departures, but you can see the error bars are huge. So error bars are very small here, but these fit within these error bars. And similarly, like this was for the cyclic model kind of things, there is some work which is going on from many years now, and it will be soon, hopefully soon appear at some point. For inflationary potentials, we get essentially the same result. I don't have as beautiful picture as this, so I haven't showed that, but that work is in progress. Okay, so what about anisotropic quantum bounces? Now, using their first results were by the Madrid group, Martin Benito, Guillermo Mena Merugan, and Tomas Pavlovsky in 2008, where they constructed the quantum theory. Beautiful work. And they did three simulations where they showed, well, singularity is resolved. We wanted to understand that for different kinds of states, and we wanted to understand it as rigorously, because we want to understand the validity of the effective space-time. This was the first test of the validity of effective space-time going beyond isotropic models. And then using the Cactus framework and high-performance computing, we haven't done Chimera scheme here yet. We are working on it now. Doing that, we can show there is a bounce. So this is the two of the scale factors, V2 and V3. Classically, you start from here, and the singularity will be here somewhere. But what we see is there is a very nice, these red dots with the blue and red fluctuations are the quantum values, and this black curve is the effective space-time trajectory. Again, there is a bounce. And we see very similar non-monotonic behavior in the validity of the effective space-time description also, depending on what relative fluctuation you're looking at. So that doesn't seem to be a fluke of isotropic models. I think there is a more general result of all loop quantum space-times, that this effective space-time description sometimes is going to overestimate things, and the quantum effects of the state are going to help quantum gravity, and a very similar hockey stick curve. Okay, so let me summarize now. The quantum geometry provides a glimpse of the way Big Bang is resolved. A very strong assumption has been made, and that strong assumption has been that this was all mini superspace. Even the Bianchi space times are mini superspace. Madrid group, Guillermo Mena Merugan's group has been working on including inhomogeneities, but there are no numerics which are done so far for that. I gave you examples of the one numerical algorithm, which is Chimera scheme, and using high performance computing, we can explore the extreme regions of quantum space-time, both in isotropic case and the anisotropic space-times. And the quantum bounce turns out to be a generic feature of all the simulations. What are the future directions? I would still say, like, though I have been working on this field for last about 15 years now, and I would still say this field is still in a very nascent stage. The progress has been slow, not only because the numerics is difficult, but also because the analytical tools are still not available for different cosmological spacetimes. So I don't want to oversell anything. I am just, what you can take home messages for isotropic FRW cases, for Bianchi one, there is a convincing results. I think they are convincing results that singularities are resolved. For other cases, we are working on them, there are lots of caveats. So be always careful when you encounter LQC salesman. So I only tell the truth. I'm not the one. I have been trained well. So the picture which we hope is the following, that there is a pre-bounce phase of the universe. There is a bounce. It is a generic. It seems to be a feature of all things which have been done. There has been no quantization so far in LQC which doesn't give a bounce. So that's a good result. But that doesn't mean it will be always there. So you have to be very careful with that. And there is a quantum geometry, there will be pre-inflation, there will be inflation, and hopefully there will be a signature in CMP. So, but for more general models, such as in presence of inflation, for in presence of inflation, we do not know the physical Hilbert space yet. That's a big obstacle because you're looking at time-dependent Hamiltonian systems. This is a problem which has not been solved for the last 40 years, and we don't have a solution yet for that. So we need people here working on this. For anisotropies, only the achievement has been done in Bianchi 1. That is something which numerical relativity will do it in a day. Well, we can do this. Let us go to Bianchi 9 and do mixed master behavior and BKL phenomena. We are 5 years away from doing quantum mixed master yet, but we are on the right track. And inhomogeneities are the main, is the big elephant in the room. There are attempts to encounter this inhomogeneity, to absorb it. But since we do not know the connection of loop quantum cosmology with loop quantum gravity, and since we don't have a full loop quantum gravity, this problem may remain unaddressed for some time. On top of it, the moment you go to even spatial curvatures, which has been done with potentials, there are many analytical and conceptual issues. Problem of time appears, for example. You have to face it straight on even before you can do numerics. You can't bypass it. You need to know the full physical Hilbert space to write any integral with an eigenfunctions. So, and on top of it, there are numerical hurdles, some of which I discussed, like there are stability issues and so on, large computational domains and so on. So we have essentially picked the lowest hanging fruits, which have been still very hard to pick because maybe I'm not a good picker. But what we hope is that in the next decade, that is my hope, that we will have some signature, which I would put my finger on, that yes, we can test it, because that will be confirmed by some numerics. Some numerics has to be done with all these inflationary models leading to trusting some equation like this, then extracting perturbations from there. Then we can probably hope for some signature. We don't even know whether that signature is going to be distinct or not. So I think it's a long road. I think I'll stop here.
Thanks so much for a very interesting but not sales pitch. We have a couple of questions.
What can you say to the extension for black holes you were mentioning?
So for the black holes, there is a quantization. So that with Alex Kurici, I have given a quantization in 2015. Looking at the structure of the physical Hilbert space, we know the singularity is resolved at the level analytically. Right now, I'm currently doing some simulations on that with Gaurav Khanna, I mentioned in my second slide. And we see that in certain limits, we get singularity resolution with the full quantum evolution. But in certain limits, which I expected because I thought that this quantization probably is not the final word, there are some instability issues. So we are finding a parameter space of black holes, black hole mass, where there is a stable evolution and you will resolve the singularity. But there will be certain masses for which you will not get the resolution. So it seems that we will have an example now where we have a consistent quantization which only gives you a viable result for a certain mass range, which is not a good result because we would like to understand what happens to other masses. So black holes analytically is still an open problem, very frankly, very truthfully. And there have been various models. Again, like the first attempt was by Ashtekar and Boyewald and by Leonardo Modesto in 2005. You can do the von Neumann stability analysis there and you can show that it's unstable, generically. So there was another attempt by Christian Bohmer and Kevin Vandersloot in 2008. They were able to fix Ashtekar-Boyewald's problems, but their problem appeared then on the horizon that their analysis becomes unstable in the IR regime. So the quantization which I have proposed now, it bypasses both of these problems. But now we are seeing potentially an issue where it will not be convergent beyond certain masses. So I would say like we still have some way to go for Schwarzschild interior. And nothing has been done beyond the Schwarzschild interior. Yes, Mary?
Yeah, question. Do you think that there might be any hope to get a kind of inflation through corrections, quantum gravity correction in this approach, not through the inflaton field, the potential that is always the case?
Yes. So for example, like you know this very well, that when we have inflation, the inflation is essentially the idea that your A double dot by A must be positive. So you can actually find that in this regime, when there is a bounce, there is a phase of superinflation after that. So not only A double dot by A is positive, but H dot also becomes greater than zero because there is a bounce for rho between rho max and between rho max by 2. There is a phase of superinflation, but that doesn't give you any...
Superinflation is not... I'm
coming to it.
Okay.
Your superinflation is not useful, as Mary says, because it only gives you maximum of 2e foldings if you fine-tune your initial conditions. There is no work. That's the limitation of loop quantum gravity. We do not play with matter. Like we just export matter and put it on our quantum space-time. So somehow...
unless there are other type of corrections which they have not been taken in the loop quantum cosmology kind of starting point.
I don't think so. Because you see there is this uniqueness result which we proved.
No, because if, none of us is very happy with putting the inflaton field.
There is actually, okay, it's good you mentioned this because there is a work which Madrid group have done. Guillermo Mena-Maragon has claimed in some papers, but that claim has not been, even he has not followed much probably. That with these inhomogeneities, there is an effective equation of state which emerges. My issue with that idea is that it just that is a very time-varying equation of state. They do not even get few e folds with one particular equation of state. So they are saying just put inhomogeneities of a massless scalar, do the what they call as a hybrid quantization, and you can rewrite an effective team mu, which essentially can be any equation of state. That's a very interesting idea. So something will be there, but what we need, I think we should ask the question, do we really need inflation in a bouncing scenario? And the problem is that most of the bouncing people, most of my friends do not work with non-inflationary models. So we should be trying to construct a viable bouncing scenario without inflation. That's a far more easier job.
Yeah. You will need it only for the perturbations. Otherwise, you're right, we don't need inflation for the rest of the standard.
But even for the perturbations, like we know, like previously there have been attempts, and maybe they can be revived. Like even cyclic model made some claims. So I think that enough number of people are not working to make bouncing scenarios viable. And again, like I would stress the same thing. Like this, I expect this picture to be qualitatively true whenever you have this quantum geometry. It doesn't matter where it comes from. LQC only gives you a concrete application.
Okay, let's continue discussions.
And we sing hard.